You're listening to killradio.org, and this is the maiden voyage of a brand new show on Kill Radio with our host, Travis the Robo-Pope. Travis, why don't you go ahead and say hello?
All right, welcome, faithful. This is the Machine Church. It's the first one we're going to do. I am the Robot Pope, and I've been that way for a long time, so we'll go ahead and get started.
Tell me a little bit about what we can expect from Machine Church.
Well, what I plan to do with this show is do some news analysis, and by that I mean looking at the news all the way around, basically, because what we're dealing with now in society is we're dealing with news that is soundbite driven, and it's driven on the pretense that you don't really know what all the things that are included in it mean. They're going to reference things that you don't have any knowledge of. They're going to talk about things that you're not aware of, and you know, you've got to look at the news from all the ways around in order to really understand what's going on. So that's what I want to do. I want to make this a show that really gets into the news instead of just soundbite clip commercial, we're done.
Which would describe CNN basically quite perfectly.
Which would describe basically all of the news organizations out there. And we're in a culture now where the news is controlled by, well, Rupert Murdoch, basically. Mm-hmm. After the Wall Street Journal thing failed, he lost his little grip on that. But that's still in the process, so we don't know what's going on yet.
Well, where do you get your information? Where do you get the content for your show, if not from these same sources?
Well, you know, the AP is a genius thing. And the thing is, the news is out there. You've just got to look for it. You know, the evening news, the soundbite news, even the talk radio stations, everything's condensed into a 10-minute bite. Or even less than that, you get 30 seconds on the Dow Jones and they clip to the traffic and weather together.
Right.
So, you know, you're dealing with this situation where, again, the news is not conducive to conveying information.
No.
So I look for news, international websites, you know, the European newspapers. There's a lot of good sites that offer insight into things that are going on in Washington, like thehill.com. There's a great website that basically gives a rundown of everything that's happening in Congress, which isn't a whole lot, to be completely honest. If you look at if you watch C-SPAN and your brains don't leak out your ears after about 2 minutes, you realize that they're not really paying a whole lot of attention in there.
Yeah, it's pretty dry stuff, C-SPAN.
Yeah,
but someone's got to watch it, and that's what you're here for.
Yeah, I make that sacrifice for the members of the church as they develop and grow. So it's just, you know, if you're not furious in society right now, you don't really know what's going on, because there's too many things that are happening, too many things that are being changed right from underneath us and right in front of our eyes. You know, we've gotten to the point where we're electing officials based on their ability to state the obvious. Mm-hmm. We've gotten to the point where, you know, the president can ask outright for things that are completely contrary to anything in the Constitution anywhere.
Right, like the right to declare war, for example.
Yeah, you know, oh, well, I'll just give an executive order on that one. Cool, yeah. So we're good. Let's go.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was complaining about something the other day where he was giving this press conference and they were asking him, you know, why he vetoed something. And he's like, I listened to Congress and I told Congress not to go ahead with this and they went ahead with it. And I told them if they went ahead with it, I would veto it. And they went ahead with it anyway and now I'm going to veto it.
Right.
And he could have been talking about anything.
He was talking about S-CHIP. And
That's right.
That's actually the first segment that we're going to go into on the church today.
Perfect timing then.
All right, man. I'm going to go dig in.
All right.
Thanks, John.
I'll be listening on the other side.
Excellent. All right. So, segue. Yesterday, President Bush gave a news conference to all of his friends that he knows by first name, that shyster. And he went on to start with complaining about Congress and how they're not doing anything. They're not getting any work done. And, you know, for any other reason that you don't like the man, you have to give him credit for being a good speaker. He can talk to you, because the way he presents these things is perfect. You've got repetition. You've got proper word usage. I mean, his writers are amazing, and I'm going to give them all the credit they deserve. You know, Congress has got to work on this. Congress has got to work on that. Congress has to work to keep our people safe. Congress has to do work on the budget. You know, all of this is making us feel like, well, Congress isn't doing shit. What the hell are those guys doing in there? Congress has actually been doing a lot, but they can't really get anything done with a minor majority and a president that's waving a veto around like it's a silver bullet. So we're going to dig right in. First thing he's talking about is Bush and the Dalai Lama. China doesn't like the Dalai Lama. America, I mean, I guess we care about the Dalai Lama. I mean, he's cool. He's nice and quiet, doesn't say a whole lot. I'm sure he's done some nice things. We know about Tibet because of him. But really, when you consider the economic partnership between America and China, pissing them off isn't the best idea in the world. And this might be a minor thing for him to do this, but some of the things he's doing with this Dalai Lama gold medal ceremony just smack of soft shoe. You know, he's doing these things almost in the way he talks about it. You know, the way he talks about it in the press conference, he's almost talking about how it's like, fuck those guys. I admire the Dalai Lama a lot. I want to honor this man. I like going to the gold medal ceremonies. Like, does this really have anything to do with our international policy? Does this really have any bearing on how things are working in the connection between America and China right now? Do we really need this kind of slight on their behalf? I mean, as much as the Dalai Lama basically is a non-entity at this point, because the notion of a free Tibet is further away now than it was when he went into exile. It's just pointless. You know, he's talking about how he's telling the Chinese people that religious freedom is in their nation's best interest. Well, I don't really think that's the case. Anyway. The way he speaks to his press corps is great. He says he looks forward to taking some of their questions. Believe it or not. Now, they're talking about something in Israel that didn't really get a whole lot of news coverage, and even the press corps in the White House had to get it from Israeli Army Radio. The Syrians have confirmed that the Israelis have struck a nuclear site in their country with airstrikes. Now, the question to Bush is, comment on it now, because he wouldn't comment on it before. Question is, Mr. President, do you think it's appropriate for Israel to take such action if it feels there is mortal danger being posed to their state? And the president's answer is absolutely nothing. His answer is, you can ask me another question. So the questioner goes on to ask him, well, did you support Israel's strike in 1981? You know, Dave, I don't remember what I was doing back in 1980. I was living in Midland, Texas. I don't remember my reaction that far back. Well, you know, the whole point of this is we want to know what you think about this. We're trying to voir dire it out of you. Nah, well, he's not going to give it. Well, I'll give Bush credit for that, because if he doesn't want to say anything about something, he's not going to say it. I'm not going to comment on the subject you're trying to get me to comment on. And again, why won't you? It's a fair question to say. I understand. But he's not going to answer. All right. And we're going on Iraq. Talking repeatedly about the threat of al-Qaeda in Iraq, we've also heard a lot about the military progress that's being made against the group. And how close are we to declaring victory? And then Bush's comment, the Iraq situation cannot be won with military means alone. There has to be political reconciliation to go with it. There has to be an emergency of democracy. That's my position ever since this started. Well, except for the fact that we were planning on it being just a military means. Now that that's failed, we'll go to the political action. Okay. And then, the war against al-Qaeda requires actionable intelligence. That's why the FISA bill is so important. And he references this numerous times, and this is about the Protect America Act that is being up for review in Congress right now. His words on that, they still want to do us harm and they're still active. Well, yeah, we know. Now, Vladimir Putin went to Tehran. That was earlier this week. Now, they want to ask Bush about what does he think about the image of President Putin and President Ahmadinejad just walking together like there's no problem in the world. And Bush doesn't do a bad job on this one, to be completely honest. Leaders don't want to be photographed looking upset at each other, and that makes a whole lot of sense. But regardless, Vladimir Putin and Mahmoud Ahmadinejad are very good friends, and with a resurgent Russia and a gaining in power Iran despite everything that's going on over there, it would be something that I would hope he's concerned about. Probably not, but you never know. This is good. The United States can't impose peace. We can encourage the development of a state. This is in regards to the Palestinian conflict and the Israelis and the Palestinians talking about bringing a state to the table again. Well, yet again, probably not going to happen. They want to know what he has to say about houses going on, the housing market slowing down. And Bush, yet again, I'm not a forecaster. He tells people that he can feel good about many of the economic indicators in the United States. Now, this is a great one, and it's also one that frightens me to no end. Question of the President. Mr. President, following up on the Vladimir Putin for a moment, he said recently that next year when he has to step down according to the Constitution as the President, he may become Prime Minister, in effect keeping power and dashing any hopes for a genuine democratic transition there. And Bush's response to that, I've been planning that myself. Which is genius. Vladimir Putin is an ex-member of the KGB. Vladimir Putin came out of the government of the Soviet Union, not Russia, the Soviet Union, that starved people to death and killed religious leaders and had the black van swoop up everyone that didn't agree with them. He's got power, and he's not going to give it up. Vladimir Putin's going to be around for a long time. If he's not the president, he's the prime minister, and to be totally honest, at this point, in Russia, it doesn't really matter what they're calling it because he's the one in control and he's going to keep it that way. And we don't really agree on things with Vladimir Putin very well. Bush tells us he agrees with Vladimir Putin on Iran, that Iran should not have a nuclear plant, Iran should not have nuclear capabilities. And in the meeting with Vladimir Putin and Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, they discussed how exactly Russia is going to build Tehran's first nuclear power plant. So whether or not they agree on things, I suppose, is up for debate. Now, Bush repeatedly references FISA, the Foreign Intelligence Services Act. Now, what he wants to do with this is extend a law that was passed in Congress in February called the Protect America Act. Now, first of all, I love the naming of all this stuff because what senator or representative is not going to vote for the Protect America Act? You might as well call it the I Want to Keep My Job measure because that could come back to bite you in the ass if you want to be president someday. The Protect America Act was a one-year, limited-term, blank check that allows the president and the Department of Justice and the Federal Intelligence Agency to collect intelligence however they want. The prohibitions only require that the person they are spying on be reasonably believed to be outside of the United States, and that the acquisition does not constitute electronic surveillance, which at this point in society is probably impossible, because if you're spying on somebody, you're not listening to him through a horn at the end of his room. You're listening to him through a shotgun microphone. Or in this case, through the use of domestic U.S. phone carriers who are culpable in providing information and providing tapping to conversations between people, at least one of whom, is required to be reasonably believed to be outside the United States. There is no prohibition on what they can be talking about. There is no solid and clear wording on whether or not this person can be an American. It's as open a door as you can get. There's no warrant required. You don't have to get any documentation on this. Pick somebody, tap them up, and listen to whatever the hell they want to say. The only prohibition is that the Attorney General shall transmit as soon as practicable under a seal to the court established under Section 103 of this bill a copy of a certification made under subsection A of this bill And these certifications are maintained under security measures established by the Chief Justice in the United States and the Attorney General. Now, we don't even have Attorney General right now. Gonzalez is gone, and we're waiting on Mukasey, who is the new golden boy and the new no-brainer, to jump in and take over this this role. Do you really think, show of hands, who thinks the Attorney General is going to have any time to submit the reams of paper certifications that will be required for all of the federal wiretapping activities? It's impossible. It's not going to happen. So you don't need a warrant. You don't have to have one. It's to be submitted as soon as practicable. And you know what? It's never going to be practical. This is Bush's biggest push for the last 2 months, really. He's been talking about this. He mentions it in his press conference at least four times. He references it in the beginning, a couple times in the middle, and then again at the end, always bringing it back to the threat, Al-Qaeda, the fact that we are under attack, we're under threat, and that we need this bill to become permanent, and not only permanent but expanded, in order to protect our federal intelligence gatherers and offer liability protection to the domestic phone companies that are culpable and are participating in the wiretapping. So, hope you like being spied on. Bush starts off his press conference complaining about Congress and how they're not getting anything done. And then at the end, question is it all their fault that these bills aren't moving when you've got veto threats out? And Bush's response is that he thinks it is. He thinks that, well, the Congress isn't doing a good job. They're not getting bills to his desk. And to be completely honest, they haven't been getting bills to his desk. But again, it's hard to get bills through in a Congress that has a minor majority, and we're dealing with things that can go on debate forever. We don't have the fire that the Republican Congress had to just throw bills left and right. We don't have the fear that got Patriot Act 1 and 2 in. We're talking about minor things in comparison, which realistically aren't minor as far as the country is concerned, but from a getting things done point of view, the last big thing that came through that I saw was a bill that would expand the jurisdiction of U.S. courts to include private military contractors activating in Iraq, because they're not covered by the U.S. courts, and they can do whatever the hell they want right now. All this was coming up about the time that we had the Blackwater incidents, and all those things were being made clear. We heard a little bit about it for a little while, and a bill was proposed. Maybe we'll see it, maybe we won't. We'll get past the Blackwater flap. That'll die down a bit, and then before you know it, that bill will never go through. It'll get to the president's desk, and he'll veto it, get sent back to the Congress, and it'll die on the vine back there. The important thing to remember about all this is that Bush threatens a veto constantly, especially now that he's getting bills he doesn't like. We're past the height of his power where he had a Republican Congress sending him rubber stampers. He talks about vetoing. He's going to veto the S-CHIP bill, which is the child health care initiative. He says that Congress knew that he would veto it, and they knew that there was no way they could override the veto. So really, the question is, why the hell did they send it in the first place? The word veto doesn't appear in our Constitution. It is a made-up word that applies to a president's ability to send a bill back for review. And this is all Schoolhouse Rock stuff, but it bears repeating. Congress writes a bill, they debate it, pass it, send it to the president. He's got 10 days to sign it. If he doesn't sign it, it has to go back to the Congress with his recommendations written to be modified, to send it back to him. And what normally happens, unfortunately, is sends to the president's desk, he doesn't sign it, sends it back to the Congress. They just say, okay, we'll write a new bill. That one's gone. That's what happened with in July with the troop surge and the spending bill that included prohibitions for bringing the troops back with a timetable. That bill got sent, president vetoed it, and the Do Something Congress decided, we'll let that one die, and then we'll write a new bill that gives him the money he wants without any checks or balances on that one. He's made it abundantly clear why he's been vetoing the bills. but he hasn't made it abundantly clear that he doesn't really get to do what he's doing. We've got this notion that when a bill gets vetoed, it's just dead, and that isn't the case. You know, they when a president vetoes a bill, it goes back. It has to be redone. It's supposed to be reworked. It's supposed to be asked. He bots his rections, but he doesn't get to just kill it. That's where we're at. People hear the word veto, and they think it's dead, and that isn't the case. It's just a great thing for him to decide that he's going to be vetoing these bills and then in the same breath complain about Congress not getting anything done. All right. I think I've gone through enough of the blather from our president yesterday. We're going to take a break for a second. When I come back, I'm going to talk about Mike Mukasey. Who? Exactly. But he's going to be the new Attorney General. So when we get back, I'm going to go to him. And we're going to get this going here. Are back. That was the Damned doing Neat, Neat, Neat from the very beginning in 78. Now we're going to go straight into some new information here, and this is about Mike Mukasey. And the news is maybe a little old at this point. This was from yesterday. Some of you may know about Mike Mukasey, some of you may not. I'm willing to bet that most of you don't. The important thing to remember is that he's going to be our next Attorney General. And, you know, wow. I had never heard of this guy from about until about a week ago, and all of a sudden he's the man. He's for sure. He's going to pick up the pieces from Alberto Gonzalez's I guess the only word is clusterfuck that completely annihilated our Justice Department and left it in complete and utter shambles. And on the one hand, you know, Mukasey comes in. He's got, after a confirmation, maybe 14 months to do some work. Then we have a new president. And possibly a new attorney general, depending on how good of a job he does. On the other hand, there are some cute little things in Mukasey's past that are not necessarily too low profile, but could mean that he's going to be the man for sure. The first thing that comes up is that in debates about his confirmation, this is the headline portion of the news. Mike Mukasey said Wednesday that the president doesn't have the authority to use torture techniques against terrorism suspects. Really? That's amazing. I thought there was a law against that. So, yet again, we're devolving our electoral process to the point where we're recognizing people for stating the obvious. This guy's in the middle of a job interview process, and come on, we've all had job interviews. When you go to a job interview, you're not going to tell them you're going to sleep on the job. You're not going to tell them that you're going to sit in the back and read a book all night. That's what you're going to do, but you're not going to say that. Jay Bybee, in 2002, wrote a memo that said the president has the power to issue orders that allow torture in defiance of the Geneva Convention, U.S. law, and international law. The president, at the height of his power, issued an executive order that disavowed that memo, but allowed harsh questioning, which is undefined, and furthermore had very vague language concerning what exactly torture consists of, inhuman treatment consists of. Apparently, it doesn't include sicking dogs on people, lighting them on fire, tying them up, and basically degrading them in other fashions. One of the big problems with Gonzalez was the fact that he wouldn't disavow the memo at all. So as far as he was concerned, that was fine. That was all kosher ground, and the president can do whatever the hell he wants, which was the hallmark of Gonzalez's stewardship of the Attorney General's office. It was blank check time, not to overuse a term, and his time spent there was months and months of faulty memory, not recalling how things worked, and generally being underinformed for his position. Now, they're calling Mike Mukasey basically a sure thing. They're using words like quick and easy to describe his confirmation. They're calling him a political concession from Bush in the twilight days of his presidency, when his numbers are at an all-time low, when he's not seemingly able to get anything done. They're calling Mukasey a concession. Bush has given him up to the Democrats because he wants to make sure something gets done and he doesn't have any fight left in him. Well, that isn't necessarily the case, because if you look a little bit deeper on Mukasey, you realize there's no fight necessary from Bush's perspective. This is a guy who was appointed to judicial office in 1987 by Ronald Reagan. He served in that position for 18 years. He's done a few things that are make you raise your eye and think, well, not quite so bad. But he's also spoken out in defense of the Patriot Act, both speaking and as a Wall Street Journal opinion piece. And furthermore, this guy sat on the bench and signed material witness warrants to round up Muslim suspects in the aftermath of 9/11. And this is when we had the full reign of the fear that Allah was going to come blow up mom and apple pie. So you've got a guy who's in defense of the Patriot Act. He's a Republican appointed by Reagan, and he's sitting there with a pen in his hand signing warrants to allow our law enforcement individuals to go out and round up basically whomever they want. This is more blank check type of stuff. So in my opinion, Mukasey isn't any kind of consolation prize or concession to the Democrats. He's exactly what we want from a Republican iron fist point of view. This guy is exactly who you'd want to sit there. And he's not as much of an idiot as Gonzalez was, so he'll be able to do an even better job pulling the fleece over our eyes. They have asked him numerous times about his relationship with presidential candidate Rudy Giuliani. Now, he has contributed legal advice, finance, etc. to the Giuliani campaign. He's a good friend of Giuliani. And that's the little snake in the grass, because if we end up with Giuliani for president, we're going to keep this guy as attorney general. Why would you get rid of your friend? When you become president, you've got a lot of positions to fill, and generally ends up being a lot of your friends. So if the guy's already there, that just makes the process that much easier. And he, of course, they ask him would you have any problem resigning if issues come up that conflict of interest with the president, President Giuliani, becomes the fact, oh, I would have no problem resigning. Of course, because you're in a job interview. What else are you going to say? They ask him, can you look the president squarely in the eye and tell him no if that is your best legal decision? Absolutely. That's what I'm there for. Absolutely the right answer. So, I mean, at this point, it is pretty much a foregone conclusion. Mukasey is going to be our attorney general unless some kind of crazy fly in the ointment hits the dirt and throws us all off. And, you know, again, I never heard about this guy until about a week ago. Now they're talking about fast-tracking him to confirmation. Bush is requesting that he get sent within a week, even though you've got to debate him for at least a week before you can even have confirmation hearings. And it makes you wonder, why do we hear this stuff when it's basically too late? I understand the fact that we elect our representatives so that they can do things in government without having to have a full consensus of the American people. But, you know, we get the news soundbite about this guy a week before he's going to take the post. And, yeah, we elected them once to represent us, but that doesn't mean we don't have a phone or an email address that we can send them some information, send them a request, tell them how we feel. You know, if we want Mukasey, then that's fine. But if you don't, if you're concerned about what he might represent, if you've done a little research and not sure about him, then maybe you'd want to write to your congressman or to the people that are on the committee that are going to be confirming this guy. And it's a little late for that now because, like I said, they're already putting him on the fast track to a quick and easy takeover of the post. Now, to be completely honest, I do not begrudge this man his new job that he's about to walk into, because the wreckage of our Justice Department after everything that happened with Gonzalez is the task of picking up the pieces on that is almost insurmountable. There's no way he's going to get it done before Bush is gone. You know, we're not talking about utilizing the public trust to get things done in the Justice Department. We're talking about trying to start regaining the public trust because of how bad this department got completely annihilated under our previous attorney general. Now, to be fair to Mukasey, he's also made some interesting legal decisions. He issued a preliminary injunction preventing the Motion Picture Association from enforcing a ban against the distribution of screener copies of films during award season. He ruled that the ban was likely an unlawful restraint of trade unfair to independent filmmakers. So, okay, that's a point in his favor, I suppose. He also spoke out against leaks by law enforcement officials regarding the facts of cases in the plot to blow up the United Nations in 1993 during an investigation into the World Trade Center bombing. Law enforcement officials were leaking facts of the case, and it was alleged that was the intent of that was to prejudice jurors and the public against the defendants, and he issued an injunction against that to keep that above board, I guess you'd put it. So, on the one hand, you've got a guy that has some sense of what the legal process should be like. You've got a guy that has some sense of fairness. But on the other hand, you've got a guy that's in bed with one of the presidential candidates who's given money to his campaign, legal advice, is a good friend of this guy. You've got a guy who sat there and signed warrants out the door, flying off his desk to round up Muslim suspects after 9/11, basically by virtue of dark hair and dark skin, I'm assuming. And you've got a guy that has spoken publicly in defense of the Patriot Act, which, as we all know, is probably the worst affront to civil liberties and freedoms in America, America's history, basically. So that's Mukasey. He's our attorney general, or he's going to be soon. Now, that's all for him. We're going to take another break, and then when I get back, we're going to talk a little bit about Turkey and Iraq and why it isn't as big of a deal as everybody seems to think. I'll be right back in just a second. right, we've got 12 more seconds on that one of Radiohead's Fun With Noise, so we're going to go ahead and cut right back into it. Now, I'm sure at this point most everyone has heard about how the Turkish parliament has approved a mission into Iraq, and depending on who you've heard it from, they're going to invade Iraq, they're going to go to war with the U.S., it's going to be a gigantic disaster, Iraq is besieged on all fronts, everything's going to go to hell, and that isn't the case at all. Turkey already has troops stationed along the border and inside Iraq along their border, and this resolution the Turkish parliament has passed to thunderous applause at a 507-19 in favor vote basically allows the Turkish government a one-year time frame during which they can send troops into Iraq for the specific purpose of combating the PKK, which is the acronym which for the Workers' Party of Kurdistan, founded in about 1970-71, very Stalinist and Marxist, and it has slowly devolved into basically just a militant organization. Now, with that in mind, everyone's talking about how it's going to be this big confrontation. You know, they're talking about the risk of Turkey and the U.S. going to war. And to me, this seems like some more soft shoe, because the real issue is the U.S. going to war with Iran. That's why we had the little war between Israel and Lebanon a little while ago. That was the staging ground for that. You know, the rhetoric against Iran has been strong and is going strong. So, you know, this little song and dance about Turkey doing something that they already have been doing. They've already been conducting operations in Iraq along their northern border. They have troops there. They're basically just adding more troops. This is nothing. This is a blip on the radar screen, because Iraq is such a no man's land at this point. Anybody could go in there. Obviously they are, or else we wouldn't have all this rhetoric against Iran and how they're arming militants into Iraq. The big reason for this, and as you listen to this show, you will find my predilection toward this. The big reason for this is to get gas prices back up. Gas prices were down, and they've been slowly climbing, and here's the reason why. Oil prices are $89.47 a barrel as of today. It's a record high. It's the highest it's been. Gas prices at the pump have gone up 17 to 19 cents in the last month. And this is just a little red flag that we can raise and say, oh, well, it's because Turkey's going into Iraq, and that adds instability to the region. They're not sure about their oil output, and now we don't know what's going to be going on because the Turks might invade, and. Well, I got to go to work, so I got to fill up my tank, and I'm going to take it because I got to pay that money that is going back up again. You know, it'll be like this for about a month. Once this flap dies down, gas prices will slide a little bit, and they'll continue to slip until Christmas, so everyone can get a new iPod or whatever the fancy little tech toy is. We'll get through the New Year's, and then they'll start to go back up again. It's just the cycle that they've got us on. We're used to, at this point, whether consciously or unconsciously, gas prices kind of ebbing and flowing, and if you look at it, they ebb around Christmas, they rebound in the New Year, and then they kind of skip back a little bit for summertime so everyone can go on road trips and enjoy their time off of work and school. And then they come back in the fall until we get back to Christmas again. All these little minor little blips that pop up really have nothing to do with the region, with the instability in the region. You know, people are talking about this being a destabilizing force. To be completely honest, sending the Turkish army in to clean up rebels in the northern border doesn't sound like a very destabilizing thing to me. It sounds like not a bad idea. And from the Turkish point of view, I'm sure it's an excellent idea, because they've got militants coming in and attacking their troops. You know, this is a group that's placing mines because they've run out of options. They're putting landmines in the ground, again, like it's the 1970s, and blowing up whoever happens to drive over it. Of course, they're intended for military troops, or so it's been. So it's been established they're intended for military convoys. But that doesn't mean it doesn't blow up a school bus full of 13 people in the middle of a small village and kill most of them. So, you know, if Turkey wants to go in and put the hammer down on the PKK, go for it. There's this verbiage where people are asking, does Turkey have the right to send troops in to Iraq? Why the hell wouldn't they have the right? We had the right, apparently, to fly over to Iraq from a different continent and take the fucking country over. So Turkey has all the right in the world to send troops across the street to make sure that their nation stays safe. And furthermore, from the soft shoe department, from the smoke and mirrors department, you know, the Congress has this big flap about they're passing the resolution to declare the Armenian genocide, the killing of Armenians, a genocide. And it's a hot button topic. It's a very sensitive topic. I used to work in Glendale, so I know very well about how seriously everyone takes the genocide. But really, that has so little to do with Turkey's decisions as a nation. Of course, their diplomats are going to be upset, and they're going to release statements saying that they're unhappy with this and doesn't, you know, they're not pleased with the outcome, and they strongly advise against it. But if you really think that the Congress passing a resolution to change the wording on something has any influence on whether Turkey sends troops to fight or not, you've probably got to do some more research, because that isn't a reason. Congress passes resolutions about plenty of useless crap all the time. Congress passed a resolution after 9/11 that all of us should pray. And you know what? If that's what the Congress is working on, then Bush is right. They aren't doing a fucking job. They aren't doing shit in there if that's what they're working on. Furthermore, there's a big hubbub about this resolution, about the naming of the Armenian genocide. We're talking about words. We're talking about what the language used is. And if we've got Nancy Pelosi talking about seriously having press conferences about whether or not this resolution is going to pass, Bush might be right. The Congress might not be doing anything. We've got a situation in the Middle East where we're fighting over a tiny little reserve of oil in the Caspian Sea region, because most of the oil, 84% of the world's oil that sits in a little area about the size of Nebraska, situated mostly in Saudi Arabia with a little bit in Kuwait and a little bit in Iraq, well, those fields have peaked, or they're going too soon. And once those fields peak, the production will never be, never, it will never go back up again. We're almost to the point where we've almost gotten to peak oil. And if you don't know the concept of peak oil, I encourage you to look it up, Google it. There's a website called copversuscia.com that has a lot of interesting articles about peak oil from very unbiased scientific viewpoints. Once that region peaks, the oil production for the world slows down. It's one of the reasons that China is spending so much time importing steel and concrete and every other raw material they can, because we're getting to a point where we're not going to be sure how much longer those big ocean-going freighters can actually get across the water. There is no alternate fuel source that can send a freighter of that size laden with supplies across the water. You know, sure, we can power Ed Begley Jr.'s car to get him to the supermarket to buy organic fruit, but we're not getting supplies across, we're not getting international trade across the waters. So unless we're going to go back to sail power, which we're not, we're talking about a global economy shutdown. And I'm getting off topic with my conspiracy theories, and when I start talking about oil, I get all fired up. But that's basically the long and the short of it. The oil prices is what this the oil price surge is all that this Turkish approval flap is about. The fact that we even know about it is just a little bit of a red flag, a little bit of smoke, and a little bit of mirrors, so that when prices, oil prices start going up, clearly we have a reason to justify to ourselves why it's happening. I drive past the gas station on the way here, and I'll put money down that on my way back, the gas price will be higher, because I just heard on the way here, oil prices record high. Barrel of oil, $8 and $9.47 a gallon, the highest it's ever been. And I'm going to drive back, and the gas prices, you know, the price of the pump is going to be 2 cents more expensive. And I'm going to go, well, Turkey's fucking invading Iraq, destabilizing the region, going to go to war with the U.S. Don't know how the output's going to go. That's why. But man, I'm on E, so I got to fill up. All right, before I go too crazy and talk more about oil, which I'm sure I'll get plenty of time to get into, I'm going to go ahead and take a bit of a break. When I get back, we're going to talk about Bush versus the Dalai Lama, Street Fighter II style, and we're out. And pause for laughter. All right, we're back. On Wednesday, President Bush met with the Dalai Lama and presided over a ceremony in which the Dalai Lama received the Congressional Gold Medal of Honor. Now, we give out a lot of medals for a lot of various different reasons. The Congressional Gold Medal of Honor goes to noteworthy souls that aren't necessarily military. The Wright brothers got one. I'm pretty sure Einstein got one. There's a whole list you can find on Wikipedia. If you actually search for Congressional Gold Medal, you can check the list of all the recipients. Noteworthy people. Nobody big mover and shaker in the last few years that I've seen. Colin Powell got one. I think Schwarzkopf got one. So, meh. It's a political wank fest, but life could be worse. And how it could be worse is the fact that China hates the Dalai Lama. And this was not a good move on the part of the U.S. from a political point of view. And our president knows it's a big deal to China. This is a quote from him. Question is... line of questioning about Bush attending the Congressional Award Ceremony and why is he going when China has expressed outrage. And, you know, when diplomats use the word outrage, they don't toss it around lightly. They don't bandy that one around. Well, Bush's response is, one, I admire the Dalai Lama a lot. Two, I support religious freedom and he supports religious freedom. This is the best one. Thirdly, I like going to the gold medal ceremonies. So, you know, he likes going. Why not? It's like going to get an ice cream, you know, get some candy. Okay, the quote that is key here is Bush tells the Chinese leadership that he's going to go. He brought it up with them specifically to let them know that he was going to go. And here's the quote. Quote, and they didn't like it, of course, but I don't think it's going to severely damage relations. As a matter of fact, I don't think it ever damages relations when an American president talks about, you know, that religious tolerance and religious freedom is good for a nation. I do this every time I meet with them. Now, Bush's inability to speak in public notwithstanding, the fact that he breaks like that, he says it's not going to severely damage relations, he knows that this is a slight. This is something that is not a good thing from China's point of view. And Tuesday morning, Dana Perino, God love her, she said, a great spiritual leader more times than I care to count. Dana Perino answers questions regarding how the president's going to handle himself at this meeting because it is such a piss off to China. And the questions, how's Bush going to conduct himself? What are his remarks going to be like? That's the line of questioning. And Dana Perino says, you know, she kept it very low profile. She gave the impression that the president was going to be present. He was going to be there. He likes going to the ceremonies. He wants to honor the Dalai Lama. He's going to keep his remarks short. He's not going to do anything major. All of this was, you know, gave a very solid impression that the president just kind of was going there. He understood the circumstances with China, the diplomatic fallout, and he was going to just kind of be there for the sake of being there to make the appearance. Now, what actually happened is that during the entire ceremony, Bush sat next to the Dalai Lama the entire time and personally provided the medal to him at the appointment of this. He handed the medal over and gave remarks supporting, you know, talking about how the Dalai Lama supports religious freedom, talking about how China should meet with the Dalai Lama and speak with him about religious freedom. This just... It doesn't make any sense that it's almost juvenile. It's almost like poking somebody in the chest just to rile him a little bit. It doesn't make any sense that he would do all these things. You know, Bush said he didn't think the ceremony would damage relations. Well, let's hope not. I mean, it couldn't be any worse. We don't get along with them very well as it is, despite being economic partners to a dangerous and unbearable degree. You know, Bush says, quote, I have consistently told the Chinese that religious freedom is in their nation's interest. And this is more proof that he doesn't know what words mean, because the Chinese government needs religious freedom like a snowman needs to get hit by a flamethrower. They're a communist government. The first thing communist governments do is get rid of religious leaders and scholars, teachers, civic leaders, anyone who has a say other than them. Communist governments, as we all know, like to keep all the power to themselves. Vladimir Putin, we're looking at you, Mr. Prime Minister, in about a year. You know, with everything that's going on, in government, you know, the approval ratings for our president have, you know, they've been face planted through the basement. We're talking basement numbers, 20s, low 20s, less than that in some places. With the failing war in Iraq, the prospect of a third war in Iran looming because we're still at war in Afghanistan, wherever that is. You know, we've got the hearings to pick a new attorney general. With all of these things going on, this just smacks of more political soft shoe, more smoke and mirrors, more like, look at this. This is noteworthy enough to take your eyes off the news, the real news of the day. The news about Vladimir Putin meeting with Ahmadinejad in Iran, talking about how they're going to build a nuclear reactor in Iran, how they want to create a coalition of Caspian Sea states that will block any attempts to build pipelines or any maneuvers into the countries. You know, that region is where the last little bit of oil is that we can get to easily. That's why we're trying to build a pipeline through a curiously connected series of nations going from the region all the way down to India, where we have good relations and easy ways to get freighters. And Russia right now is in the mix of stopping that. You know, the funny part is when all this resolves itself, that oil will basically be useless anyway, because it's less, it's such a small amount that it won't have any bearing on any global economy at the point that it's actually accessible, if anybody gets to access it, which will be Russia, because, you know, it's in Russia's backyard, and all those states used to be Soviet Union states. So as far as Russia's concerned, and as far as Vladimir Putin, ex-KGB member, is concerned, they're still his fucking territory. That is Russia's oil reserve. That's their little ace in the hole. It's gonna push them ahead of the U.S., because will we ever drill in Alaska? Maybe. Probably not, though. And the technology doesn't exist to get at any of the oil reserves under the ocean floor, at least not without massive investments of money that oil companies aren't looking to make right now, because right now they're sitting on paid-for investments in all their refineries and drilling operations that just keeps funneling money into the pockets. Bush meeting with the Dalai Lama is nonsense. It's nonsense news. It doesn't have any bearing on what's going on. And the fact that it is so high profile is asinine, to be completely honest. You know, the fact that China is upset about this because of all the coverage we've been getting, you know, they were very careful with Bush's private meeting with the Dalai Lama on Tuesday, not to have any media present, not to allow any photos out. It's obvious that this is a big deal to China. And we're still doing it. Bush still goes ahead with it. There is a very great article entitled How China Could Crash the U.S. Dollar on a Whim. It's a long article. I'm not going to go into it in detail at this point because we're getting up on time and I got one more song to play before I'm out of here. But the long and the short of it is China and the U.S. are so financially embedded with each other at this point that if China decided to crash the U.S. dollar, they could pretty much do it whenever they want to. They wouldn't, because the nuclear option, so to speak, of crashing the dollar by selling off all of the U.S. government bonds of ours that they own, all the debt, the national debt that of ours, the United States national debt that China owns, China is in control of our national debt to a certain percentage. If they sell that off, whatever they keep will be devalued. But if they decided to sell it all off, then we are pretty much hosed. In World War II, Germany had a group of engravers that were both Germans and prisoners, et cetera, et cetera. And their job was to remake engraving plates to make new money. And they finished the job on the British pound. And one of the tactics they used against Britain in World War II was to fly planes over the UK and drop bales full of British money that was exactly the same as the British money that the government printed. The pound completely crashed. It was useless. The money was worthless. They almost got to the point where they finished it with dollar bills, but we won the war before that happened, so that didn't occur. But the thing is, China's got planes loaded with U.S. dollars right now that they could fly over and drop on us, and everyone would think it was manna from heaven, but we wouldn't realize the fact that all that money that would be getting sold off would completely destroy our economy from the top down. From real estate to interest rates, everything would completely go to hell. China's at a point now where they are in pretty solid control of a lot of elements of the economy, and thankfully they're not a very fast moving nation. But again, the risk is there, the threat is there very much so, and we've done it to ourselves by sending all of our jobs over there. We don't have unskilled labor in the U.S. anymore because it's much easier for a company to pay a Chinese kid 14 cents a week to build Astro Boy dolls than it is to pay an American to do the same job. And China is getting to the point now where they're building up their tech. They're building up their technical jobs, their higher skilled jobs. So they're going to outsource all of their jobs. All of their labor jobs are going to get outsourced and sent to other nations in Asia. And they're not coming back to the U.S. So China's going to have a control of tech jobs. China's going to have a control of unskilled labor jobs. With 500 million people in China that still live in rural areas that haven't been tapped as a labor force, they've got a pretty powerful hold on things if they want to take it. It's not immediate. It's not right now. But it's soon. And it's happening under our noses. And it's being allowed to happen. Because we basically have no control over it. We've elected our government officials. They're there. They're doing the job that we elected them to do. And, man, that's all there is to it, really. We've put China in a position where they've got the control by sending them jobs, selling them our national debt. All right. I'm going to go one more song, and that's going to be it for me. I want to thank everyone that listened to this first sermon from the Machine Church. I want to thank John Hirschfeld for bringing me in on my first run through, and that's it. Thanks to Kill Radio for giving me this voice. You're listening to Machine Church on Kill Radio, and then it'll be back to the depths of the archives.
Ashes to ash and fun Major Funky. We know Major Tom's a junkie, strung out in heaven's high, hitting an all-time low. Stay clean tonight.